Welcome to another Designers FM podcast. Today we have an interesting discussion and I'm joined by Peter Levels from Nomad List and RemoteOK.com and Andre Erasmchuk. We're going to talk about the future of work. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to another episode of our Designers FM podcast. I'm joined by Peter. You've met him on a previous podcast, which we didn't air because of audio quality. But Peter Levels, he's a very successful indie entrepreneur, and Andre Erasmchuk. Peter, welcome first. Can you do a short, brief explanation for yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me, David. I'm Peter Levels. I'm the founder of Nomad List and Remote OK. I'm a very big proponent of remote work, of people relocating to better place to live for them. And I've been doing that pretty much for the last 5 years now, yeah.
Cool. So the reason why we're recording this episode is because, Peter, you said something on LinkedIn. I'm going to...
Twitter, I think, now. Yeah.
Your hot take was immigrants who would have gone to the US to build startups will instead move to remote work hubs all around the world and build from there. I replied to that message and I said, Andre, it's happening. And then you were like, what's happening? And then I said, the third correction's happening. So maybe, Andre, you can maybe explain a little bit what the third correction is and maybe start with what the first and second corrections were.
Yeah, sure. We can definitely start there. So hello, Peter. Again, nice to meet you. Definitely goes without saying that I agreed with your hot take on that data that you showed. Yeah. A while back, David and I had a discussion. I don't remember why we were discussing it, but we were just talking about technology and Silicon Valley and all this other kind of stuff. So I moved to Amsterdam after living in Silicon Valley for about 20 years. So I got to experience the dot-com bubble and the bursting of that bubble, first in real time and firsthand and whatnot. And we were talking about how everybody seems to wants to move to Silicon Valley and why did I leave? Why was I crazy enough to leave? And I said, I personally believe Amsterdam is going to be one of the next hotspots. And we got into discussions about why. And I talked about corrections. So I don't know enough about the first correction, but my understanding of the first correction was sometime around the late 80s or early 90s in Silicon Valley. The housing market crashed. Atari went out of business. Yeah. Apple was struggling because Steve Jobs got fired and some other stuff. The computer industry was getting hammered by IBM, which was back in New York. So the Bay Area was this really vibrant scene going on. You had Intel and you had all these chip makers, and then you had Woz making the Apple, and then Woz and Jobs go off and make the Apple computer. And there's all this stuff going on, and there was a crash or a correction, if you will, not a crash, but a correction sometime in the late 80s or the early 90s. I think it was the late 80s. And I think Atari was the one that kind of fell down the hardest with it. So when you look at the Bay Area at that point, literally everybody working at these companies was from the Bay Area. So they were raised in the Bay Area, they grew up there. People moved there or they went to Stanford for college and stayed. So a lot of the first energy and all the innovation around computing technology came from a very small location, which was basically this part of California. I moved to the Bay Area in 1995. And ironically, I thought I had missed everything. I was a young kid. I got hired by Adobe to go work on Photoshop and Illustrator. And when I showed up in 1995, I was of the opinion Apple's doing poorly. All the cool things have been done. Atari's gone. I thought I missed everything. And I literally moved to the Bay Area the month that Netscape went public.
Wow.
And Microsoft released Windows 95.
Yeah.
So little did I know that I was about to experience some crazy stuff. And that was the dot-com era. So the Internet Explorer stuff from Netscape and everything just went crazy. So the dot-com area was interesting because it was called a gold rush. It was a very crazy, exciting time. People were making gobs of money. I remember when Elon Musk sold Zip2, went to start X.com. I saw PayPal merge with X.com. You saw all these things going on. I've got my pets.com dude here behind me.
Nice.
The sock puppet, because pets.com spent like $1 million or $2 million on the Super Bowl ad and all this other kind of crazy stuff. So the dot-com era, what happened was, is that instead of people being from the Bay Area, everybody moved to the Bay Area from other parts of the country. So from Kansas, Dallas, Miami, Chicago, you had all this influx of talent from the United States move to the Bay Area. to the Bay Area through that time. Things went crazy nuts, skyrocketing values, IPOs. I was seeing people like the B-52s play Christmas parties and Third Eye Blind playing Christmas parties, and everybody's holding these major events. It was just insane. Money was just crazy. And then the bubble burst. So it was March 2000, I think, or 2001, March 2000. I always forget. March 2000, I think. And what happened was like within a month, the Bay Area became a ghost town. It literally became a ghost town. Buildings were empty. People were gone. And when it blew up, everybody went back home. And home at that time was back to Dallas, back to Miami, back to Chicago, back to Boston, et cetera. The only people who stayed behind in Silicon Valley at this point were the diehards, crazy people. I consider myself the crazy person. I was in, my job was always about computers and whatnot. So I stayed, even though everybody I knew was leaving. And it was right about that time that PayPal stuck it out and survived the crash and went public and got bought by eBay. Went public, then got bought by eBay. Something like that. I always forget the order.
Yeah.
In 2002 or whatnot. And the next climb started happening. So over the past 10 to 15 years, what you see now is the same effect. Crazy money, all kinds of stuff being invested. But this time, instead of the first correction, which happened because the people in the Bay Area invested in all these things and blew up. And they just went home. They just went from Cupertino back to Redwood City or something like that. In the second correction, the blow up occurred and everybody went back to their state where they're from, back to Kansas City or back to Miami, back to Chicago. Now what's gone on is if you go to the Bay Area, you have a lot of immigrants who have come to the Bay Area over the past 10 to 15 years. A lot of folks like behavioral economics folks from here in the Netherlands. You've had people from England. You've had people from Iceland, China, Korea, India, a lot of India entrepreneurs and engineers. You have the whole spectrum of folks, South Africa, Kenya, all of these places, all over the world have gone to the Bay Area. And my theory was with I was talking with David is that basically when the third correction happens, which it looked like it's beginning to start to happen, which is when things blow up, everybody's going to go back home. And this time around, we have AWS, we have Google Docs, we have online spaces, we have remote working, we have Zoom, we have digital tools and infrastructure where you can do these things. And so my theory is the third correction, things are going to blow up and you're going to want to not be in the Bay Area. You're going to want to be in other parts of the world. To me, Amsterdam is one of those parts of the world because there's a lot of stuff here in Amsterdam and the Netherlands that is perfectly ready for this kind of thing. Another place is going to be Portugal. I think Portugal's got a lot going on for it.
Yeah.
You're going to see places in India. You're going to see places in China. I think Kenya and especially could be an interesting spot. So there'll be places in Africa where you can actually now build businesses that are going to be the next big things because you now have the infrastructure tools. But more importantly, you have the ability to have the people also be not have to live in the Bay Area. They can live wherever they came from. So yeah. When you tweeted that out, information out, all the 2020 feels like the correction is happening. What kind of correction it is, we don't know. I see rents falling down in the Bay Area finally. Everything's gotten too crazy. Just it looks to me like it was looking back in 2000 when everything just blew up. Sometimes blow-ups are good. Sometimes when a bubble bursts, it's good because it redistributes power and it redistributes the economics of everything. So we'll see, but that's what that tweet was about. The theory is about if the third correction is happening, get ready because now we're going to see an even bigger rise for the next generation of companies and tech and software and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think you're in a good spot now, Peter, because of Nomad List and the whole...
I thought you meant Portugal.
Oh, yeah.
Also, yeah.
Yeah. No, but I agree with your thesis, man. Yeah. I think you missed one thing, though. 2008 was a crash, too. So I think there's been 2001 or 2000, 2001 kind of, 2008... I think 2008 was an interesting crash because I remember being in Amsterdam and suddenly you had empty buildings and suddenly you had hipster cafes and I'd never seen like hipster cafes and suddenly you had people dressing up like hipsters, like the whole, it was like an economic crash and then the culture changed as well. And I remember that distinctly. I was talking with Jim about it, with David and my friend. We were like observing this cultural change and every economic crash has a giant cultural change. So I think you're right.
That's a good point. I've thought about that. And so the reason why I'm trying to avoid crash, I said it a couple of times, but I actually mean correction. But a correction in the tech industry specifically and the behavior and stuff that happened in Silicon Valley specifically. Because for better or worse, Silicon Valley is where a lot of what we're dealing and doing now has come from. It came from this wild concoction of the aerospace industry in the United States, with the Department of Defense, with Stanford University, and a part of the country that was more progressive and liberal thinking, but also just basically economically viable and with great weather to live.
I think the progressive thinking part is, let's not go too deep in this, but that's changed as well, like now in Silicon Valley and SF. And let's not go there because it's too much politics, but yet if a place becomes maybe too monoculture, which SF and Silicon Valley was never, it was a very diverse culture. It's become very monoculture now, I think. Then you can go to the rest of the world and that's still diverse. There's still a lot of different thinking people in different places. So actually outside SF is the most diverse place in the world right now. And that's also very interesting in terms of the ideas that are being made, the business that are being shaped, and the freedom of ideas that can go around, and which came from Silicon Valley.
Yeah, that's absolutely all true. And right now, when I look at what's going on and talk to VC folks and stuff back in the Bay Area, they're all starting to finally look outside of the bubble. Yeah, when you accumulate too much cruft or too much lack of diversity, to your point, there has to be a correction. And
yeah, and it's just a cycle. It's a cycle with place, with business and stuff. Yeah, I agree completely. David, what do you think?
I was thinking that all of this, of course, got insanely accelerated by COVID, because all of a sudden, like, other things become way more important. And I think what you were seeing, like, on a local scale, that, like, people move out of cities. I think you tweeted something about this as well, Peter, where you said that, like, the people that were living in San Francisco were moving to, early on this year, were moving to, like, states like Utah to go
Texas.
Work and live there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what I've been thinking, especially now with COVID, is that it all happened in the West, right? In the Western world. It was in Silicon Valley and it was in Western Europe. But China's economy is already doing pretty fine. I think they even grew in Q2.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah, they did.
Pretty much. So I think, like, the what you said, Andre, like, Amsterdam could be next. Maybe before COVID, I completely agree with it. But now that COVID is happening, I think once it's safe to travel again, I think there's way more people just are going to places like Portugal in Europe, because I'm thinking it's like it should be the same time zone, because a lot of companies accept that you work from anywhere if it's in the same time zone. So anywhere, maybe even South Africa for people in Europe could be.
Yeah, to be clear about that, I was referring to that Amsterdam is going to be one of the spots in the next correction. Yeah. So Silicon Valley in the .com, when it blew up, it made small pockets of interesting places like to go to, whether it be in Portland, Oregon. New York City finally took off, like in Brooklyn after the .com crash. Austin, Texas was always a little bit of a hub of computers and stuff that took off. So when it corrected and kind of the bubble burst, it made some smaller pockets that then grew. So what I'm talking about this time is that when it blows up, you're going to see a lot of hotspots all over the world start to grow. Yeah. And I feel like Amsterdam is going to be one of them. I think Lisbon is definitely going to be another one. I think people, especially in Europe, they underestimate the power of Portugal being part of the EU, in that Brazil, a lot of Brazilian tech people can move to Portugal and feel at home because the language is reasonably close. So if they want to bring their families over, they have a place to live. Their kids can grow up in a culture that is, it's not Brazilian, but it's, again, Portuguese and Portugal itself. There's a relationship there. It's kind of like if you were having a Spain and Argentina, or Spain and Guatemala, or something like that. It's not the same thing, but it's close enough. So Portugal is a great entry point for a lot of folks in South America to come over. But to the other point, you're going to see lots of places in Indonesia and India again. India is going to have its spots. I definitely think South Africa. For me, I am taking the long game on Kenya being the place for aerospace and where they're going to start building rockets. Just because of the dynamics of shooting a rocket from the equator is less rocket fuel to get up there, so it's cheaper.
Yeah.
But that's a 20-year out, 30-year out game. If you want to get in now, get in now. But so it's not that Amsterdam is the only one. There's a lot of spots. And I think
it's interesting what you just said. There's all these spots. Your spots are a little bit different than my spots, and then David's spots, for example. We all have our own preference, I guess. I'm talking a little bit more from the perspective of, you know, like the last 5 years, like digital nomads and remote workers. First of all, they have a weird image. They have this image of that they're fast traveling everywhere. They're really not. They're traveling really slow, like 3 to 6 months, staying in a place, depending on the visas. A lot of them are settling down for years in places, just not their home country. And a lot of them are optimizing for living quality. So if you'd look at the quality of life rankings, you'd end up in like Vienna or Sweden, or Scandinavia, those kind of places. But that's based on healthcare and no corruption and stuff. But like practically from a living, you know, perspective, from let's say you're 30 or 20 or even 40, you want to live in nice places. You want to probably live in a place where it's probably warm weather. You have a beach. Maybe if you like skiing or snowboarding, you want to live in like near the snow sport places in the Alps or something, or in Colorado in America. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these people around me, they've been optimizing for living quality.
Yeah.
And then you end up in places. Still, Portugal is really good because it's Mediterranean. It's affordable. It's fast internet. It's pretty developed, actually. A lot of people in Europe went to Asia, right? Like the typical ones, Bali, Chiang Mai, Vietnam, for example. Mm-hmm. So I think what we can learn from the digital nomads, and they're always a little bit out there people, right? They're a little bit vigilante. So you cannot use them as a representative for the mainstream now that's coming into remote work, which is happening now. But you can take some cues from there. And I think a lot of them, a lot of the, what you said, like moving south, a lot of Americans will be moving south into Mexico. They're already doing that now. Like Playa del Carmen, I don't know, Tulum, Puerto Escondido, these smaller towns, which are very livable, kind of hipster vibe and stuff. A lot of Europeans will move south as well to Portugal, Spain as well, Greece. Greece is very affordable too.
Also might give Italy a chance to rebuild finally.
Exactly. Yeah. All these Mediterranean countries. And Koreans and Japanese and Chinese, they will move. If they can work remotely, it's very delayed there. But if they can work remotely, they'll also move, you know, to Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. So I think you see a general move from the north to the south based on living preferences. But I'm talking from a more, from that perspective.
Which is interesting because like back when we were hunters-gatherers, we would move to where the food was. And now basically we have food, we have work, and now we're moving to where it's most nice to live. So one thing that you mentioned, Andre, which is interesting, because I think there's a clear distinction between digital nomads going to work and live somewhere where it's nice and new hotspots coming up because companies are moving there, right? Because when there's a cluster of talent. People. Yeah, when there's a cluster of talent somewhere, it becomes interesting for companies to settle there. Correct. As well. The example you had of like Portugal and a lot of Brazilians moving there, like in football, European football, that's exactly what's happening. Mm, yeah. I think Portugal, like Benfica and Porto, the two major clubs in Portugal, are major hubs for Brazilian players coming to Europe because of the ease of use of the language.
Yeah. Right?
And the second thing is that I think for digital nomads, it's easier because they mostly like you don't have a boss. You don't have a boss, Peter, where you have to check in with every day.
No, but most digital nomads do have a boss. They're employed by startups in SF or in Europe.
Yeah.
But how do they...
There's sometimes coders for hire, or they're copywriters or content makers. There's varying different types of those roles.
There's a lot of freelancers, but I think most are working. Yeah, they're...
I think the way to test your theory, Peter, is to track... So I agree with you on the digital nomads part, in so much that they can figure out the infrastructure pieces that we all need, or that white-collar businesses need at least. They have the experience of how far can I hang out away from a major hub of a city before it's inconvenient to get certain supplies or whatever. But I think there's already places that we can track to see how much of it is a hotspot versus how much it is changing where people are moving to other spots. So for example, a lot of designers and a lot of front-end developers are from the Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. So Prague had a lot of designers that were being guns for hire. And I wonder, because a lot of them moved to the United States, and I wonder if they're moving back to Prague or if they're moving back to someplace else, or if they're picking up, to your point, picking up and just going someplace where they want, where the living quality is for them. I think that's a data point to track at some level to see what's actually happening. Are people moving to where they want to live and are able to work, or are they moving to places where there's other conveniences, that whether it be the language or familiarity or stability or whatnot. I tend to think the bigger companies are going to attract talent to the other spots. So getting companies into Amsterdam, there's a lot of startups and other things happening here, which looks pretty good.
Yeah. But one thing I don't understand.
Sorry
to interrupt. One thing I don't understand, you guys are talking about companies moving, for example, to Amsterdam, companies moving to Portugal. I don't understand how that fits in this new remote reality where new remote companies in Silicon Valley are 100% remote. They don't have an office and they hire from worldwide. So why does it matter where the companies incorporate or move to when there's no offices anyway?
Some of it is the business that they are in require tax and legal.
For sure, but then so for example, I'm incorporated in Singapore. A company should incorporate probably where it's most beneficial for them to be, but the company doesn't need to move to Lisbon or to Amsterdam. If they incorporated there, it's just a paper thing.
That's a good question. I would have to ask my friend Mike Davidson. He's at Envision, and Envision has now become basically a complete remote working style company. They have a headquarters in San Francisco, but I actually don't know why the headquarters has to be in San Francisco or registered or.
Most startups are incorporated in Delaware. Yeah, a lot of multinationals that operate internationally are incorporated in Amsterdam for fiscal reasons, right? For tax. A lot of them that operate in Asia are incorporated in Singapore, for example. So the incorporation, it doesn't really matter, I think. Matt Mollowack from WordPress, they don't have an office anymore. My friend John from Ghost, they're fully remote. All these examples of GitLab, I think is fully remote.
Almost fully remote. They're not quite fully remote, but they're almost fully remote. The only questions I can answer for you on this one is going to be the things that are the parts that we are not looking at. So for example, families. A lot of the Dutch entrepreneurs that moved to Silicon Valley have now moved back. Why? Because they're having kids now and they want their kids to be educated and raised in a Dutch education environment. So there are things like kids and there's things with certain legal pieces and some are just passport and visa issues. So I think that's the part that digital nomads are good at moving around. And I think they do define and can define the way. And there'll be smaller companies, so the thing about smaller startups these days is the infrastructure is so much cheaper now to build. You can actually see doing a digital nomad style company where everybody just moves around whenever they feel like it because.
Yeah, so I think that's again, the problem with the term digital nomad. I don't know anybody who moves around so much.
Right.
I think it's pretty much the same people because I know they're the same people. It's the remote workers that live away from their home country. It's pretty much digital nomads.
Yeah, but are they EU? Or are they Schengen? Or because.
From anywhere.
For an American to live in Portugal and do the EU thing, they have to go through a bunch of hoops to do that. I had to do that here, even in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
But the EU, it's great. If you have an EU passport, moving around is great. This is why the British are screwing themselves with Brexit. They've just made a mess of everything for themselves because they've now made it incredibly hard for people to move around.
So what people usually do, they stay a while in a place and they go to the same place again. And then after a few years, they will do the paperwork and Portugal now is a very nice entry point for Americans to get in. I think D7, a visa, for example. So that's getting easier. A lot of these countries are getting these startup visas, for example. You know about that. Amsterdam had it. So that's getting easier. So I think it's a giant overlap. And I hate the term digital nomads because it F's it up completely. But I think we're talking about the same people. And if all these companies are 100% remote, which they're becoming, and now the mainstream companies are also thinking about it. This week I read Vodafone in Holland is going to be like, you can stay at home for 3 or 4 days, work from home, for example. Yeah. So they're suddenly going remote. So if that's the assumption, then I think you get people relocating to hubs, regardless of where the companies operate from.
I think I want to take a little sidetrack because I think it's interesting. So we'll start with a philosophical question, like where's the best place to live?
Yeah, so I think the best place to live is where your community is, where your people are. Because I've been in a lot of amazing looking places and that doesn't work for happiness. You're most happy with your friends, the person you love, or maybe you love multiple people. As long as there's a community around you of people that doesn't make you feel alone, the people that match you, that's where you should be probably. And then the other stuff is what kind of weather you like, what kind of activities you like.
How big is the community need to be? So, 10 people, 100 people, 500 people?
I think it depends on you as a person. I think you need 3 or 4 friends, right? Something like that. And what I like about Bali, for example, in Canggu, like you get in there and immediately you meet people. Everybody's working on something creative, something ambitious, entrepreneurial. I've lived in Amsterdam and it was really hard to meet those people. Even you guys are very much into the Amsterdam startup scene. But it was very hard to meet these people. If you'd walk into a random cafe or coffee place in Amsterdam, you wouldn't meet these people. You would meet other types of people.
So the reason I ask it because recently, like right now, I think a lot of my closest friends live, I think, like within 5 minutes walking distance. And the reality is that I don't almost never leave the neighborhood anymore because everything else is here. Like we live in Amsterdam, so there's shops, there's everything. You have a house and all your friends are here. So I think it really depends on in which phase of your life are you. If you have kids, Like, you probably don't want to travel around just yet, or maybe you want to put them in a school in Kenya, I don't know. But if you are, I think, more in a... But you started, Peter, by saying, fuck it, I'm just going. And you met all those people, like you met like-minded people that like to travel and like to spend 6 months in South Korea and then 6 months in Bali and then 6 months in Prague. But I think if you are, let's say I want to pursue this lifestyle as well right now, and I don't have friends like that, then for me, like moving to Bali for 6 months while my friends are still in Amsterdam and then moving to Prague for 6 months while my friends are still in Amsterdam is different. So I think right now what you're seeing, I think we're all like we're creatures of herd. So we're probably going to do one person moves somewhere and then you'll see like a cluster.
Yeah, 100%.
I think. Yeah. And that's the chaos distribution part first. We're about to go through the phase where it does blow up a little bit and people are going to be like running around trying to figure out where to go.
Yeah,
and 100%. They'll start to cluster in spots.
Like, yeah,
I definitely agree with
spots. This is spot on. Yeah, I completely agree with what both you guys are saying, and I think if you've ever organized a group travel with your friends, like you know how hard it is to get everybody in the same dates in the same place. It's like very difficult. So it's going to be a big challenge. But man, I've been talking about this exactly this like for the last few weeks with so many people. If you like, I think it also depends on, for example, your friend group. So it depends on who's like who are the most influential people in your friend group, for example. Who's like somebody who will move to, for example, Portugal, says, I'm going to live in this surf town. And then will your friends follow you? Will their partners follow you? If you have kids, is that even possible? And I think we might look at it too conformistic, where it's like, oh, we have all these strong ties in this one place, which we do, but things sometimes change. And that's also the fun part about life. I don't think people will, with families, will all go digital nomad. It's bullshit. I don't even think digital nomad, like I said, exists. I think it's an ending subject. I think the thing, what we're talking about is the same thing. It's relocating to remote work hubs, staying there for years, maybe. We're in the same line, and I think that's where it's going. Moving with your community, with your friends, or moving towards places where there's activities, where you will make friends, I think that's realistic.
It'd be interesting. Is anybody making any tools to help people know where the clusters are happening?
My site is that's nomadlist.com.
Is it nomads or is it clusters of?
That's the problem with the name. I need to rename it to remotelist.com. I've been looking at domains actually, or places.com or something. It's a branding problem because for sure.
I think you mentioned it somewhere else, Peter, saying right now people are going to, historically people would live where they work and now people are going to work where they live. And I think it's interesting, some examples from people actually older than all of us, like friends of my parents, I think they have three befriended couples and they all bought like a house in a village in Italy.
Yeah, very common,
Because it's dirt cheap. Because I think there's even villages in Italy where you can buy a house for a euro because everyone's leaving. So it's interesting to see if this is actually going to happen, that not just nomads, because nomads you portray as like this single backpacker going around. And I think what you're saying is that's the branding problem. But I think what's more interesting is, are these people actually going to move more in like herds or in clusters towards cities? And are there enough mature places where you can tick off all the boxes of all the group? Because if you're traveling with what you said, like with a lot of people, some people like street food and other people like to have like an all-inclusive experience.
Yeah.
Are there, because you like, how is Bali maturing? Is that still like a hipster vibe or is that maturing into a place where you can actually spend a life with your family?
I think, it's a good question. I think in terms of Bali, yes, somewhat. It's becoming like there's a lot of these private schools, like the Green School, which is like this eco type of school. I think you're spot on about, look at Americans are interesting. Americans, they relocate a lot, way more than Europeans. Americans will be born in Utah. Then they go, then their father gets or their mother gets another job on the other side of America. They move there when they're seven. Then they will go to university in a completely different state. Then they will get a job offer in a completely different state. And when they're 35, they've already lived in like five states or something. It's pretty common in America. And you talk to Europeans, and you talk about to Europeans, and they're like, I moved from Nijmegen to Utrecht and then Amsterdam. for studying. But this is all like, that's 2 hours together in distance. So Europeans move much less. And it's also because of the language barrier and stuff. But I think Americans are a good example where they make friends quick, maybe a little bit more superficial than Europeans, but they make friends quick because they have to move a lot. And I think looking at those people is a kind of an example of, I think, what the people will become more in the future. Related to what your question was, maybe not your whole friend group will move with you, probably not. Maybe one or two friends. Maybe you didn't even like half your friend group, but you never had a choice. For example, this is all possible, right? So
is this a personal attack to Timo?
Maybe, right? Yeah. But rerouting or changing these ties is also a possibility. It's not as fixed as we think.
Yeah.
It's fixed because it was never an option to not have it fixed.
Yeah, it's interesting. So yeah. To your point, as an American, it's exactly what happened to me. I went to a different school almost every year as a kid. Went to high school on the East Coast, went to college on the East Coast, moved to California, the whole thing.
Exactly.
The reason why it's easy to do in the United States is twofold. One is it's one country, so your license and all the major stuff transfers. The infrastructure was the other part. So the infrastructure includes the freeway system and some other things, and our entire culture was built on cars. So it, to the point, gets me the thinking that one of the ways that this is going to work out is when countries reinvest in infrastructure. If as soon as the European Union or the countries in the EU, as soon as the governments get their act together and make the infrastructure more reasonable and solid, we don't want to all be relying on AWS, for example, for all of our businesses. That's just crazy. We want other companies. We want better infrastructure of the pipes and to get around. And there has to be a better way to get your visa and move around if this is going to work. Maybe, I don't know how far that goes, but when countries reinvest in their infrastructure, I think we'll start to see a lot of this start to shake out even more.
What kind of infrastructure do you mean? Because Europe has great highways. A European can move all over Europe.
Yeah. So to me, the funny thing is I come to Europe and I'm like, why don't you guys travel more? Because it's
exactly, yeah,
so
yeah.
easy to go from like Prague to Porto.
Yeah,
like, I don't understand. So I moved here. I've been traveling every month pretty much.
Yeah, like, you travel more than Europeans do.
Exactly.
Yeah,
sure. And all my European friends are always amazed. Like, where are you going? I'm like, I'm going to go to Malta today. It's okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the European has the travel infrastructure in place. It has some of the other pieces in place. Like
what are the other pieces? Like AWS?
Euro, financial, euro, for example. So the euro, the money system is one of them. The other one is it's reasonably good. Like your phone goes from country to country without charges being cut.
So what's not in place?
What's not in place in the EU, as far as I'm concerned, is the tax system is botched. Yeah. And this is mostly as an American. This is not as somebody else. As an American, I get double taxed because the United States decides that I have to pay taxes, even though I'm not using anything right now in the
US. As a Dutch person, like it's very easy for me to move to Portugal. I don't even have to register here.
Exactly.
I think.
You can't get out of here easily. If you wanted to go to like the Bahamas, it's tougher.
Yeah, yeah. I think most of the relocation will happen near to where people are from. So Dutch people, Swedish people, mm-hmm. move to Spain and Portugal.
That's an interesting theory.
Move to Mexico.
Right.
And the Japanese Koreans move to Thailand.
So you're thinking so there's going to be a radius of relocation. It's not going to be.
Yeah, because I think also you want these ties, right? You still have mm-hmm. family. You want to, for example, fly back to your parents or whatever. And like flying back from this surf beach here in Portugal, I calculated within 3 hours, I can drive to the airport, fly to Holland, and drive to my parents within 3 hours. It's insane.
One of the reasons why I find Amsterdam to be a hot spot for me is because of the agriculture here. The food industry is huge, but also because I can get to Houston or to San Francisco or to Seattle on a nonstop flight, even
exactly.
though it's 10 hours.
Yeah. And that's like a property of a place where you want, like a hub where you want to
exactly.
be, because you want to be close to a good airport that has high connectivity. You said before, like you look at all these digital nomads moving out really far away from the cities to see if it works. I don't know them either. They're mostly in big cities, even San Francisco, New York, right. Jakarta, Bangkok, whatever, Seoul. So they're mostly in capitals. They're mostly in big cities. And
Yeah. The other part about this is the cultural part of it as well. So to start companies and to have these hubs, you need people who also understand their culture, especially if their business is going to need to be done in that culture. So if you're doing microtransactions, the way it's done in Kenya is completely different than the way it's done in Portugal.
Yeah.
So if a company wants to do products that do like that, they were going to want to have people that are in Portugal and in Kenya to address those markets better. That's probably going to be another factor of how all this infrastructure stuff works, is you want companies to be able to be set up or remote. Another thing that's been going on, Facebook is talking about this. I know Twitter has, Jack has announced that basically anybody at Twitter can work from home forever, whenever they want. And Facebook is now looking at some program that's somewhat similar. And one of the challenges in the United States that I think is not a challenge, but people are calling it a challenge, is that why should somebody get paid $160,000 a year as a software programmer to live in Omaha, Nebraska, where the average salary is $30,000? That seems like it's unfair. And I was always of the opinion, well, there'll be chaos in this blow up when people move around a bunch. But you do want that wealth distribution. You don't want the wealth to be isolated and stuck in one part of the world.
Exactly, yeah. No, people should be paid for the market rates, I think. And
exactly.
It should have nothing to do with the place you're in.
If you start playing these games where companies are trying to pay $30,000 for an engineer in Omaha, Nebraska versus $160,000 in San Francisco,
yeah.
I think that keeping track of that's just going to kill the whole
thing. No, it's unsustainable. But the unanimous Twitter opinion with my kind of scene is, I think David Heinemann Hansen from Basecamp and stuff, he also speaks out loud about that salary should just be, it should not be tied to a place.
Yeah, but I've been thinking about this as well. And the question is, what's going to happen is that you're going to lower the pay in cities like San Francisco with a result that no one's going to live in San Francisco anymore? Or are you going to pay someone an absurd amount of money living in Nebraska or living in Brazil? Or
I think absurd. I think I read that this week, that one of these companies, they are saying, yeah, let's just pay them the highest salaries we can.
Yeah, I think it's that too. So the only example I know of was when I was at Adobe in the 90s. And we had engineers that lived in Minnesota, just outside of Minneapolis. And there was a whole group of 30 of them that lived there that did not want to live in the Bay Area. So Adobe let them live in Minnesota. And they got paid Silicon Valley salaries in Minnesota. And they all had huge houses with 2-car garages and pools and all kinds of stuff. And they were living great. They were still doing great work. And they did a lot of stuff on Lightroom and Camera Raw and some other imaging stuff. But that was the perk, was like, they didn't want to live in the Bay Area. They had roots in Minnesota and that's where they worked. And
exactly,
they had an office and it worked really well. And I tend to believe that it'll even out at the higher end. You don't want to race to the bottom. If it's a race to the bottom, the whole thing will kind of blow up. I just don't think that'll work. You do want to.
This is a monumental shift of money. Like, if this happens, this means money flows out of these big cities. This is huge. This is like
it's a big correction.
Billions of dollars. And yesterday I was calling with somebody from somebody who's promoting the Canary Islands, like Gran Canaria and stuff, these Spanish islands, and they are trying to attract remote workers. And he said, until last year, we were trying to attract these digital nomads. Now we're attracting Facebook employees and Google employees. And he made a really cool point. He said, if we could, for example, get 100,000, that's quite a big number, but 100,000 of these Silicon Valley people that are making like 150, 200, 300K, we could replace the tourist income of, and I think they get about 20 million tourists a year. It's the same amount of money with only 100,000 people.
Yeah.
So you have 20 million tourists or 100,000 remote workers living in these Spanish islands.
Same amount of money. Theoretically, it all corrects itself out. That's the theory, is that it'll correct itself out. We have to see if that works, but that is the hope. It redistributes properly. It doesn't redistribute in an extreme.
I think it will redistribute to places that are attractive to live.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see, because I mean, Stockholm is cold and lots of people like living there. I could actually see living in Stockholm.
The data says people like living in Stockholm, but I know a lot of Swedish people that don't like living in Stockholm.
Okay.
So it's like, it's on paper, again, healthcare, corruption, it's all good, but where do people really want to live? Do you want to go surfing? Do you want to go snowboarding when you wake up?
I'm one of those weird people who probably wants to go live in Iceland. I don't know why. I prefer
that's,
cold
that's
weather.
Cool. Yeah, why not? Yeah. No, it's cool. I'm just saying, I think there's a big difference between the quality of life rankings and where people actually are going to live.
No, that's definitely true.
And I think the most important thing aspect of this discussion is that where that attractive place is, it doesn't really matter. What's more important, that the power of deciding where you want to live is actually yours now. And it's not
because
it used to be.
It's so
you
big.
Live where your work is. And now it's different, right? Because I think I can imagine that if you ask all three of us to come with like five aspects of what a place where you would live needs to have, then I think all of us will come up with something different.
Yeah. Ironically, mine is Amsterdam, because I'm a city person. And it has everything that as an American, I find valuable and comfortable and everything.
Yeah.
But it's
true.
Well,
the thing about you had to move from America to another place to find your place.
Yeah. The Amsterdam is a city, it's because it's not really a city. It's just a big town, a big village. Yeah. And that's part about it is that it's just big enough. It's small, but it's just big enough.
Yeah. So there was something that you didn't like about living in America, which you did in Amsterdam.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is like you had a desire. I don't really like it here. I'll go find a place where I do want to be. And I think that process a lot of people will have. David and me are from a small town in Holland, a relatively small town. But it's still like number 8 biggest town, 200,000 people, I think. We moved to Amsterdam because that was like the big, cool big capital. There's cool shit happening. And so we already been doing this for a while. And like David said, this is the point. Now we are going to have the real choice to choose our own place. And
yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Because I mean, European cities and towns are so much different than the United States. Oh, the United States is just newer. But one of the cool things about the Netherlands is when you go to these small towns or villages almost, and they're not that big. They have 2 grocery stores, 1 butcher, they're like hamlets. They're literally just big enough to keep 1,000 people being happy and living there. It's interesting to see, to your point about moving in different directions, if people are going to create those kinds of environments in Portugal or in Italy or in Spain, are they going to be like little hamlets that are almost, you know, incorporated, for lack of a better way of saying that, to be their own hub? So even though everybody in the hub works for different companies, they have incorporated themselves into a town.
This is happening, man. This is happening. So I've been driving around Portugal and you see all these really these small little, you see these eco villages being built up, but also these just small price with 20 people buying houses, buying land, and then let's build these beautiful modern design houses on there. It's already happening. But it's mostly for retirees, right? Which you just said before, retirees. Yeah,
no, I'm talking about having younger folks in their 20s and late 20s, early 30s doing this.
Yeah, so what David said about retirees in Italy buying like this shared property, I think you can look at retirees a lot because they don't have the tie of work anymore. So we can look there for some idea of what's going to happen with everybody. Mm.
That'd be interesting.
But so for me, the interesting thing is because we are still in the bubble of tech. And we have been fortunate enough that it's been stupid that we wouldn't be able to work remotely for the last 5 years at the companies where we worked, except for you, Peter, because you've always been remote.
It's ironic that it wasn't more common. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now all of a sudden it's become common, not just for people in tech, but also for people outside of tech.
Yeah.
And so for the interesting question is, my younger brother, he's a teacher also, and he teaches class now digitally. Because the schools are now digital, are those people able to do this? Is he going to be able to teach classes from Portugal, where all his students are still in Amsterdam because they live with their parents?
Yeah,
and I think that's the most interesting thing, because people in tech, I think Nomad List is also a lot of people in tech.
I tend to think it's going to be white collar. I think it's going to be white collar jobs. I don't know if I'd call a teacher a white collar job or a doctor or a nurse a white collar job. Do you know what I'm saying? So I think there'll be still some jobs that are going to have to just be what they are. So those are going to be a lot of trade kind of positions, plumbers, firefighters, that kind of stuff. But white collar jobs, tech jobs, a lot of tech jobs, a lot of fintech and financial jobs, sales, obviously, consulting, security, all of those kinds of things it's going to happen more for. So I guess we'll see from there. And to your point, the ironic thing here is that we're about to find out very quickly, because it's not that companies are dipping their toes into this. Companies are going all in very quickly without any testing of this at all.
They're forced to, right?
We're just going to find out for sure. And it's going to be messy for it's going to be messy for a few years. I hope it's not too messy for too long, but it's going to be crazy, where teachers might be forced to do this online thing it needs to be maybe a 2-to-1 split, where two parts face-to-face, 1 part digital. We don't know, because it's just happening so fast.
Yeah. So. David, also spot on this. Education is a really big thing. And what I see happening, and I see companies being started now, like I talked to Andreas Klinger today. He's the ex-CTO of Product Hunt, and he's this investor. He has this remote first capital VC firm. And we were talking a lot about this stuff too. And he said, we're investing in a lot of education startups now, which are mixing. So you have online education, but then it's ridiculous to think that kids don't need like IRL contact. Of course they do. So what's happening is these local schools, which will affiliate with the online classes. So there's a central hub online where you get the online classes, like for at home or something, 2 days a week. And then 3 days a week, you will go to a local place, like a small school or something, where your brother might teach these real kids. Yeah. And so it has to be a mix completely. It cannot just all be digital. So I think all these small schools, and they could be anywhere. So for example, Harvard, they actually have a kids program too. Harvard can start an online kids program and then train people to operate in all these smaller affiliate schools in different cities around the world or small towns to do practical classes. Like we did in uni, you remember? You had big lectures and you had these small classes.
And I think so I've been giving this a little bit more thought about like teachers. Right now you have yoga teachers, you have online performers. My girlfriend's mother is a singer and she used to go to Texas a lot because she plays country music. Now she can't, so she does her concerts on Facebook and Instagram Live. Now all these people also see, hey, what I did locally, or where I used to travel to perform on a gig, or where I used to go to my studio to do like yoga classes, I can also now do digitally, right? It's not ideal, but you can do it. And as the tech matures and we get more and more technical abilities to do these things, I can also imagine that also distributes, right? Like that my brother teaches digital class and he's the local hub for the people that happen to live around them. Because what you see with classes going digital, it's like, all classes are digital, why when you live in Kenya, can you not follow my brother's classes?
Yeah.
It's the same, it's digital. So maybe there's just like, you get these local hubs, like Airbnb has like local concierges for the spokesperson for if there's something wrong with your Airbnb apartment, you go to the local person. Maybe it's more that you get the more distribution.
Some of it's also just going to be, again, back to the infrastructure comment that I made. Infrastructure is everything needed to a layer below. Yeah. So when it comes to education, accreditation, can you be legally teaching somebody something? Muslim countries have certain rules about what you can teach or not. There's all these, we have to be cognizant of, we're about to blow up. I think we're about to blow up into this third correction. It's going to be very messy.
Yeah.
And who knows what the hell is about to happen, but it feels like it's starting to happen. And all of these issues, there are just issues that are below that we haven't given thought to in a long time or haven't needed to. And they're all going to come roaring up at us. And I hope we embrace it, because I think it'd be amazing to have core classes, especially like math and science, to be able to be experienced by someone in Kenya just because they have a digital connection and they can watch the class on their phone. And then they can go do something else in a local school that's going to be more to what they need in their other parts of their education. But I have no idea where that's going. Is it all digital too much? Is it going to be like social media where we're just going to experiment live and discover, oh crap, this is actually rotting some of our brains because it's going bad? I don't know. Yeah. I hope we don't do that. We're about to find out.
Yeah, I don't think you can go all digital with these things. I think it's too extreme. You need local classes. Kids need to socialize. Adults need to socialize.
Yeah.
One of the most important parts of school is socializing. It's not the material.
Yeah, so the hamlets, having the little villages come back where you get these small clusters of community. Yeah. And to your point at the very beginning, Peter, you need a community. You still need that.
I think my point was that if you have your digital classes, that means that your local environment is not bound to your work or your classes.
Oh, I see.
Right? Yeah. If you want to go to Harvard, you have to go to New England, right? You have to go and live there. Right now, theoretically, you should be able to go to Harvard and follow all the digital classes from like your bedroom in Kenya or Bali or Portugal or in Amsterdam, wherever you live.
Yeah.
So yes, you need social contact, but that doesn't have to be bound to what you do anymore, your work, your university.
The course material can be global, and that's interesting how it's going to make education more equal as well. If everybody can follow like a Harvard course or even Harvard school or whatever, that can make education be better for most people in the world.
Yeah, that whole model, what happens to the whole model? If everything is online, then theoretically, you don't need to spend $2,000 on books. You don't need to spend like any number amount of money on the dormitory. So what are you spending your money on except for the Harvard name in that case?
I think it's a little crazy. Very probable that it'll become free. and that you, it's like Lambda School. Do you know Lambda School? So YC startup, they give away free education for, I think, coding boot camps. And then when you graduate, you give, I think, 20% of your salary to them once you get a job. And if you don't get a job, you don't pay.
Yeah, I have heard of that. Yeah. I wanted to do something similar like that 10 years ago. Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. There's also new models. This hopefully will present new models. The working model, I think we're all going to start doing, the digital nomad people have started the process, but by no means is that how we're going to end up. We don't know.
Oh, it's just a start. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't know what balance of certain things are. Like, how do you do review meetings, or how do you do postmortems and all kinds of other business processes that generally always require you to be in the room with other people. And like in education, there's my old alma mater is testing out new ideas where they're reversing the classroom model. So rather than going to class and listening to the teacher lecture, and then you go home to your room or whatever and do your homework, they reversed it. So you go home and you watch the lectures online, and then the next day you come in to class to work on your homework with your teacher.
Yeah.
And so models like that might start to become more prominent, because it makes more sense to just to listen to the lectures online. You don't need to sit in a room, be bored out of your mind or tired from not having enough sleep or whatever, where you can just watch the lectures on your own time. And then you get together to actually solve the problems based on what you've been taught.
I agree. And I think everybody looks at me always, oh, it's a remote work digital nomad person. You must like everything online. And I don't. To your point, Snapchat in Venice Beach, they have product teams spread all over Venice in different buildings, even residential buildings. And these product teams, they work together. Sometimes they live together as well. So you could even have a cluster of product teams being like your front end is in Lisbon or in Surf Town. Your back end is in London because you need to have a couple of coders there. You could have product teams being distributed as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of different, we don't really know what's going to happen. It's fun to think about though. It's fun to predict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's have another session in a year to see where we are. Yeah. My final question would be for both of you. How fast do you think we're going to move? Like when are we going to see like big changes happening?
You go first, Peter.
It's very hard to say, but what Corona this year taught me is that the pace I thought things would change is way too slow. I thought 2035, I did a presentation 5 years ago. I said 2035, there will be 1 billion people working remotely away from their home country at least part of the year, kind of like digital nomads. I think it's way faster than that. And so I think the question is what percentage of society will actually start changing their life, realistically, like changing things in their life, relocating or something or whatever. Is it 1%, right? Is it 5%? Is it 50%? I don't know. But the speed is, as Flaberg asked me, how fast it changed this year.
Yeah, it did.
It's insane.
I think to the point that we started this conversation with, the correction feels like it started. I don't know if we've seen the event yet that officially starts it. So what I mean by that is just from my experience during the dot-com days when the market crashed was like March 12th or something like that, 2000. There was a day it actually happened, and the next day was different. Everything felt completely different. I feel like we're getting a sense of that. And maybe it did happen and I wasn't paying attention, and it happened in late March of this past year when the lockdowns in Italy and all that stuff began in earnest. Maybe that's when it was. Maybe I won't be able to notice that after the fact, but I feel like we haven't seen, I fear the event is going to be coming here very soon with the US elections and Brexit happening for real.
Yeah.
And we'll have an economic event that was worse than what we saw in March. That's what I fear. The last correction happened very quickly when it started regaining. So it took a long time for the world to see it. But like I said, companies like PayPal and other stuff came out of the ashes of the dot-com crash within like a year and a half. So I think we'll see the fruits of some of the tech side of this probably in 2022, the beginnings of companies coming out that have already digested how to behave like this, how to work like this, how the infrastructure works, how to make their people happy. And I think we'll see the next wave of it starting in full around 2024, 2025. The prediction you made, Peter, about that many people going remote is pretty bold. And I actually think it's a little crazy, but now that I think about it, the reason why I got distracted, because now that I think about it, I'm actually, maybe it's not that crazy, because the speed at which everything's been happening has just been bonkers. So I think the speed is going to be by 2020, 24, we'll see all this stuff in full happening. And by in full happening, the people on the first, at the very beginning of the wave are going to see it. It'll take a while for everybody else to get on board fully with it. Yeah. But we're going to see a lot of innovation and crazy new things coming out of it in 2024. That's my prediction.
Right now, I see a lot of people, there's this whole discussion going on like about the new normal and like when we're going back to where we were before. And there's all these conspiracy theorists. And I think, and this is something philosophical that I've learned this last year, a man realizes he has one life when his first life ends. And I think that's happening in hyper mode this year, is that people suddenly start realizing, oh, fuck. Corona really came into a lot of people like, oh, fuck. Like, we have a life. And now all of a sudden we're inside and we have to cope with the situation. And the minute we can start doing things again, I think is then there's going to be so much rapid change, because I think the people like us, we realize, okay, we've been doing things really wrong for the past 20, 30, 40, 50 years. We're going to realize that we want to do something else. And me personally, I'm looking forward to working in Portugal for a month or 2 months and then moving somewhere else. And I think now, having that idea in my head, I don't want to go back to an office anymore. Mm. I just don't. My bold statement is that we're going to see it next year, like mid next year, hopefully, when the vaccine is in everyone's veins.
Yeah, maybe that's the event, is the vaccine. Yeah. Maybe that's the one that's going to like snap everybody into action. I like that.
Because I feel because people are waiting for something. Mm-hmm. And I think we don't have to wait for something, mm-hmm. but we are waiting for an event. And maybe to Anders' point, the event is the vaccine. Call to action.
No, but what you just said is spot on. Like, it's a global midlife crisis.
Yeah, it is.
It's 100%. Exactly. I wake up, oh shit, I'm dying. I've never thought about death so much this year. You think about death because of Corona. And then you think death because you're in lockdown and you get depressed. It's this realization of life and that you're dying and you need to do something with your life. And you're right. And 100%, man, I've never heard somebody describe it so properly. I 100% agree. The call to action, what I wanted to say was, as you said, the companies arose from these ashes of 2001, the internet bubble crashes in 2008 too. There's always new stuff. There's so much opportunity from new companies being built, new creativity, new art. The culture changes. If you're listening and you're thinking of you want to build something, whatever it is, go build it now, because this is a magnificent cultural, social, economic change that's about to happen. We're in the middle of it. And that's so much opportunity, way more opportunity than in 5 years or 4 years ago. It's 100%. So go make something.
Yeah,
definitely. 100% agree.
Amen. Yeah. I think mic drop. I think we're done. Go build something. Don't wait. Don't wait for the vaccine. Go build something.
Sounds good.
That's it. Thanks for joining us this week on the Designers FM show. Make sure to visit our website, designers.fm, where we put links to all the shows on all the different platforms, so you never have to miss one. And you can also subscribe to updates, so you don't miss a show. While you're at it, if you like the show, please leave a review on iTunes, or just tell a friend about us. We'd be extremely thankful. That's all for now. I'm your host, David, and this class is dismissed.